that it was a major disappointment to me until we moved down here. Then I saw that, I remember looking at the blueprints you guys had come up with to have a condo above, all the efforts you guys made to keep us there. And, you know, various ideas and this and that and so da da. And then we moved down here. Now I look down there. And it didn't take long before I realized that was one hell of a smart move. That was disastrous to have been down there. We wouldn't have a club. Mm-hmm. It'd be the general public coming in and out. We'd have high security and et cetera, et cetera. So it was the greatest move we could have ever done. Yeah. We're still in Waikiki, still in blocking distance.
And it's a family club.
Yeah, and it's ours.
And it would never have been down there. No. Right? Remember, towards the end there, like, families were, you know, they wouldn't let their kids come down to the club because of the younger kids, because mm-hmm. everybody was coming in off the beach and there were right. other things they were getting out.
Easily accessible. People walked through that tunnel.
Yeah.
I remember that very well. Would have had that private security. So in hindsight, yeah, this is a tremendous move. What I've done is I've rented a room for the July 4th in our own club site at the Outrigger Hotel.
Yeah.
With Richard Kelly. As a classmate of mine at Funhouse, so it gives me some pretty good prices. And so I'm rented a room for the July 4th day down there to watch the canoe races from a Mackay room
at
the hotel.
Yeah.
Yeah. I told Klein to come on down if he wanted to take a look, so we'll see if Klein can make it or not.
Yeah, that's good.
Try and get him down there. See, it was a great move for coming down here. You look down there from here with binoculars, and it's just wall-to-wall bodies. Yeah, bodies. Even when you drive through Kalakaua. Now, it's like an overcrowded cocktail party.
Yeah, I think that's
so lucky to have this site. And it's so beautiful. I mean, parking is reasonably ample. Yeah. It's always a challenge.
Yeah.
I guess all of us as past presidents have gone through it and still keep an interest in it.
I was consulted a number of years back. The visible assessment on the monthly statements and monthly bills so that people, new members to the club, could say, well, what's this assessment for? And you could say, that's assessment that goes into the building fund. Okay, when either mm-hmm. we might possibly lose our lease or have to move or have to purchase
right.
a fee. But now, as it is now, there's no such sort of visual reminder.
Right.
And people come in and not realizing what we are ultimately faced with. The board never seems fit to do that. However, they have allocated all
initiation fees to the building fund.
Building fund.
Yeah, that would be a good idea. I like that because it makes the new members aware.
Yeah.
You know, even if it was like $5.
You know, if you just
the building.
Say, what's this assessment for?
Yeah.
And that they can tell our story.
And the building fund.
They're never successful in getting the board to do that, but I think it would be a good idea.
Maybe we'll have to be run again. Yeah, that would be an excellent idea. Yeah, I stay up with the Elks Club, and I know their financial problems and hope that someday the generation will come along and realize that getting $30,000 a year is not as good as getting $5 million at 5%,
yeah.
even with just $5
million. I can never understand
some of this. I can't either.
And all the time and effort expended on trying to get the resolution of that. Meeting with a club member, fortunately, I don't have to worry about that anymore.
Yeah, well, hopefully somebody does.
Yeah, it'll work out.
Talked to people about it in the past. And
well, anything else you can think of that you...
Well, what have we done? What have we done? Oh, I took the... in the late 60s, early 70s, amateur sport of surfing, professionalism. I'm the clown that wrote the first professional surfing charter. I spent weeks writing it. Wide World of Sports was coming down once a year to do the Duke Kanamoku surfing contest. And they were very frustrated because, obviously, the surf would not cooperate. And they were on a tight schedule, ABC Wide World of Sports, because they had to go back and do football. And if the surf wasn't up, they were really panicked. So Maroon Arledge, who was then the president of Wide World, later became president of ABC, had said, you guys ought to take this thing professional. And I think Van Dyke was the first one I talked to, and Van Dyke was his teacher at Punahou. And I had a business and entrepreneurial background. I said, write the damn thing. So I became the first commissioner of the IPSA, International Professional Surfing Association, wrote the charter, and it had to be tough because in those days, the surfer image was bad. Everybody thought we smoked dope and all this kind of weird stuff. And I made a real tight charter. I copied a lot out of the PGA, Professional Golf Association, because they had the strictest rules. So I plagiarized a lot of their rules, along with others. I spent a lot of time in the library downtown. Wrote the charter, sold it to Smirnoff, which is Hubline Corporation. And they put up the first money and ran it for, remember, I ran it the first winter. And then we had Fred Hemming, who was the beach captain, in charge of running the beach. And so Freddie took over in, I think, year three. But I had some outrigger members. I had myself as the commissioner. I had Bob Wilson, unbeknownst to the general membership, who mm-hmm. just moved here from Sacramento, was a prominent television owner of television stations. So I brought Bob aboard to help me in negotiating the TV contracts. Ron Haworth, a member of many years, was writing for the Advertiser. So he followed us around and wrote all the articles on it. So I had those three outrigger members assisting me in their areas of expertise, and Freddie running the beach, and so forth, so on. And so we got to a couple of good years out of the Smirnoff contract. Freddie added his thoughts when he took over, and then this Randy Rarick added his thoughts when he took over, and today it's a major television sport. Yeah. And it all started with the fact that I proved to the Smirnoff that we had clean-cut kids. Tommy Connors was on the police force at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And I had Tommy do some computer work for me. So every surfer that wanted to become a professional had to fill out my application. I ran it through the computer, got a police record, or lack of police record, and proved to the sponsor, here's all my pros and here's the police record for your eyes only.
I had no idea that you would.
Yeah, and it flew. With that kicker, they said, okay. The only problem I had was one kid, Jeff Hackman, fantastic kid, great surfer, probably one of the best at the time, had been busted for trying to smuggle in some grass from Australia and some stereo sets. So I had to keep Jeff up, which hurt me. I didn't know the kid well, but I knew he was great. And there's an attorney call. He's going to threaten suit. And I said, okay, I'll go along with you because I want Jeff in, but I got to keep him out the first year, which I did, and then brought him in. And then the South Africa contacted me, 1970. They wanted to sponsor the first World Surfing Championship. So they invited me down and asked me to bring three surfers of my pros down. And, no, two surfers. So there was a lot of hullabaloo locally, you know, because the apartheid system, people protested and were writing letters to the editor, don't let Sorrell go down and all this sort of stuff. And, you know, I wasn't going to pass this up for free trip, all paid for. So I took my wife at the time, Carol, went along. I took Billy Hamilton and Jeff Hackman. We went to Florida, and then we went to Rio de Janeiro, and then to Johannesburg, where we toured the stock exchange there when gold was $35 an ounce. I'll never forget that. And we surfed from, spent a month surfing from Cape Town up to Durban. Took us almost a month surfing all the locations up there at the guests of the Gunston, which is a cigarette company that was our sponsor. They paid for everything, a hotel, food, drivers, cars. Did all the political work to get us into hotels. I threw him a curve because I filled out the visa. It said nationality. I put English/American Indian. And Billy and Jeff got their visa within 6 or 7 days. Mine took 3 weeks. Drove them crazy. and then, of course, a story within that story. There was a movie called The Longest Wave,
yes,
which took place in South Africa, Cape St. Francis. So we spent a lot of time down there because the surf wasn't really great when we were there. So we waited a while. And during that process, I was invited to a couple of cocktail parties. At the cocktail parties, I've run into various celebrities and diplomats. And didn't know at the time, but I was talking to somebody about surfing. And it was an obvious thing because we were invited to this party because of surfers. And can't recall exactly what I said, but we had a conversation and came back and he called me a day or two later just as I was packing to leave St. Francis to go up the next surfing site, and he wanted to know about Hawaiians. You know, what kind of people were they, so forth, so on, and I said very laid back and so forth, so on. At the time, with the apartheid system, if you're not white, you're black. If you're Hindu Indian, if you're Hawaiian, if you're American Indian, or you're Chinese or Japanese, you're black. You're not white, you're black. So Hawaiian was a black, in their opinion. So a deal was cut somewhere along the way that I could bring in Hawaiian. Now, this is the black. Now, Arthur Ashe, Belafonte, all the famous singers, Nat King Cole, were never allowed in South Africa because they were black. Now we're talking about Hawaiian, who was black, in their opinion. So I'd gone to a meeting or two. What they were going to do is allow me to bring in Hawaiian. And he could not stay at a five-star hotel like we could. He could stay at a four-star. He'd get a driver, and he'd get a car. Everything would be paid for. And the cover was they're going to put it all over the paper. So by the time we got to Durban, they're going to have this big, huge surfing contest, the Gunston 500. And this Hawaiian was going to be in it. But they covered the butt by the fact that he was Hawaiian. Hawaiian, Hawaiian, Hawaiian. So I called Eddie Aikau. And I called, well, I talked to his brother. Anyway, I brought one of the brothers in. And I met him at the airplane. I talked to the parents, Aikau. Instead of meeting him at the gate, I went right to the gangplank. I put my arm around. I said, look, bro, this is a different world you've ever been in. Everything's free, including booze, but don't punch anybody out. Promise me, you won't punch anybody out. You got a visa for 21 days, and our visas have been extended, but we had to leave. Well, we could spend a week with him. So we introduced him to everybody and did the Gunston 500, which Jeff Happen won, and this Hawaiian was in place. So within a week, we had to leave. Our visa extension expired, so we all left, came home, and this kid stayed there for another 2 weeks. I thought, damn, he must be having a grand time. And he showed up in Hawaii, and I remember that the day he was to arrive. That night, Star Bulletin, the kid had held a press conference, and he wasn't really a bright kid, and talked about how his surfing buddies had abandoned him and left him in this world of racial prejudice. And the kid had been treated like a king. He'd never been out of the islands, and he just lambasted the thing. Well, the door closed shut on the world championship, because I was going to give it to him. Because, you know, they deserved it. They'd worked hard, and they had great plans to have this surfing contest. And this kid just slammed the door, and all his progress, he was the first black. And once you understand, he was Hawaiian, but still black. And just ruined the whole damn thing by just slipping off. He'd probably been coached by somebody. And I got an idea who he was coached by, somebody a little bit more smarter, but still a radical in that movement.
Took advantage of him.
Exactly. This kid was... And he was racial, you know, he didn't like Holly, but that's the way the kids grew up. And in 1974, I think it was, I get a thing from University of Cambridge, standing achievement, and he threw award for breaking the apartheid system. It made the London Times that a Hawaiian had entered South Africa, surfed in a contest, unheard of, because he was black, in their opinion, and they gave me credit for pulling this thing off. And I didn't do a thing other than just shoot the breeze with some diplomat, who I didn't know was a diplomat at the time, about how laid back the Hawaiians are, their beautiful race, and da-da-da-da-da, and surfing is the greatest thing, keep all this, my standard story on surfing. And I get this thing in the mail, I figured it out, and I showed it to some people, and the cover letter wasn't that clear, other than apartheid. Was able to break the apartheid, so he became one of the men of achievement 1973 for doing that. I thought, well, that's kind of interesting.
For goodness sakes.
Yeah.
I learned a lot today.
Yeah. And the kid, unfortunately, went on to die out at sea. And it's a sad story there.
Yeah,
because, I think what he was doing is, if you call Tommy Holmes, had taken a surfboard during one of the trial runs and paddled to Kauai to get help.
Yeah, went to get help, yeah.
Yeah, and Sea Flight found him and picked him up. I think this kid was going to do the same damn thing. I think for how like Tommy Holmes can do it, I can do it, and disappeared.
He designed and built boards, didn't he? Because I had
his brother did. Pardon? There were two brothers.
Two brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I had my last board. I bought the last one I ever bought was from. Oh, I can't. It was the second to last one I ever bought. He had designed. I had my brother scoop.
Mm-hmm. Oh, a little bow. Yeah, a little spoon in the bow. Yeah. Yeah, they were lifeguards at Waianae, and they have a big wave contest named after the kid.
Yeah. You still surf, by the way?
I haven't. Since I came up with the physical problem, I backed off, though I still have my surfboard locker, and I have the boogie in the back of my trunk, and I'm waiting. I'm waiting. I'll go out this sometime during the softball. Start with the boogie.
I had my circle locked them until about a year ago, and I have two.
Oh,
boards,
that's not hurt.
9-6 boards in there, and they've sat there for a long time. I can't surf because of my back. So I think I'm done.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I just gave him to him. But he'd done me a lot of favors.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I have visitors here, and he'd take them out surfing. And,
mm-hmm.
In terms of it, wanted ashes spread in the ocean, and I just took him. Because we had a lot of battles together over
there. Oh, sure. He's an easy guy to battle with.
Yeah, no, when we put together the Hawaiian Canoe Racing Association.
Oh, HCRA, right?
You know, I wrote up the new bylaws for that.
And he was, yeah,
he ended up being a real good friend. So.
Yeah. He fought me on that pro surfing thing, too. That's easy to chit chat about oneself, you know.
Yeah, oh, it's wonderful.
It's easy. I still think I should be interviewing you, but hopefully.
Really, you know, I've been told to never conduct an interview in excess of an hour.
Well, we've been.
We've been over an hour.
Okay, over 15? Okay.
Yeah. So I'll tell you what, let's call it quits for today, and if you could have anything more that you want to add.
No, that's pretty much it. I've enjoyed, you know.
Yeah, if there's anything that we can always have another session and add to it. But many, many thanks.
I told somebody I'm a little early in my life to be interviewed. You know, usually it's always the shakers and movers. They get moved like you and Klein.
I'll cover that in a minute. Well, I think we'll conclude it on that note. And okay. Again, many thanks.
Thank you. Mahalo to you.